applies for a given point in time. We're not sure whether this applies to a particular claim, but we are getting to the point where if we cannot pay, then unfortunately that clause may become relevant. In terms of productivity, we need to have a dispensation where your income and expenditure matches. So your teams work, your people work, but what they are working on is something you can afford. And in the longer term, Chair, safer roads with fewer crashes produce fewer claims, which will help us at that level. In terms of income, we will continue to motivate for additional funding. 8.6, as I said before, is validly due. There are 4,300 claimants, lawyers, healthcare providers, caregivers, corporate suppliers and creditors who are waiting for their money. It does need to be paid. We are trying to pay it as soon as we can. But there is also the fiscal reality, having heard the Minister of Finance in the budget speech. You can't just add 35 to 45 cents per litre to the existing fuel levy and think it's not going to have a knock-on effect on the economy. In terms of expenditure, we'll optimize payments. We'll continue to review the cash management plan. You've seen some elements of success, Chair. We haven't had the requests not yet paid grow to 11 to 14 billion. So that in itself tells you something is actually beginning to work. The experience has been good, as I mentioned. We will continue to increase direct claims, the prevalence of these. If we look at 2015-16, the legal cost saved on a direct claim was 1.6 billion rand. You don't see it. It's not a separate line item on our income statement. But because we finalized those claims directly, there's 1.6 billion rand in the kitty, which was used to honor all other payments, which would have helped us. So if you look at it practically, if those weren't, your requested not yet paid would have likely increased by 1.6 billion rand. If we look at the direct claims we've just registered, assume the average legal spend at the moment of about 190,000 rand, it's a future saving to the institution of 3.6 billion, which of course will help us use cash for the other claims that fall due. Introducing a dispensation that matches income and expenditure is very important on expenditure, income, and productivity. But the most important thing, Chairperson, is that we need to seriously bring the RAF scheme of arrangements to an end. Without getting into the merits of whether one likes the RAF, what its benefits are, whether it's a good design or not, before we even get into the qualitative discussion, you have a dispensation established in 1942, the subject of 9 commissions of inquiry, insolvent since 1981, cash-trapped over decades, 1982, 1983, expenditure exceeds income. More recently, more money than ever before is given to the RAF, and it's still short. And then you start looking at that. And I think if we were a company, this wouldn't be the case. If we were normal PTY Limited, it wouldn't be the case. But I think we need to manage it. The liability is too big. It's a weight on our country. Even when the RAF dispensation ends, before you consider replacing it with something else, that liability will still need to be paid. The requested not yet paid is proof of how you monetize that liability, that deficit, as productivity changes. So, Chair, there are 2 points when it comes to expenditure which I think need to be taken. The first is the current scheme of arrangements just is not sustainable. The second is we do want to do something for accident victims, so let's look at putting something into place, but always see them as two. On payment demands, optimal administration of the writ process is important. We are engaging the Board of Sheriffs. We're not convinced the sheriff who's attaching our account without notifying us or our bank is doing so within their jurisdiction. The absence of notifications, we don't believe, follow the rules necessary for writ. And attaching accounts for the second or duplicate payment of something paid before is without a shadow of a doubt a problem, which we are attending to very swiftly at the moment. Plaintiff communications will continue, and communications to the public at large will also continue. Chair, this is my conclusion. I'm sorry it's taken this long, but I felt I needed to just make sure we go through the concepts. The RAF is and has been insolvent for decades, since 1981. It has endured severe cash constraints more recently because what is payable exceeds what we are able to pay. It is expensive, benefits some, navigates serious resistance to change, and operates in a business context where an ordinary business facing these challenges would not have traded beyond 1982. An insolvent business that is illiquid would not have traded beyond 1982. Despite its challenges and limitations, the RAF continues to receive, to assess, to finalize claims, to render services to claimants, to transform itself, to record successes, and to drive the evolution of the business into a new dispensation which addresses the weaknesses of the present model and which will benefit considerably more South Africans for decades to come in an affordable way. As the RAF, in the context of our financial constraints, we remain committed, chairperson, members of the committee. We are committed to finding solutions and funding. We are committed to utilizing all available money to honor payments which are due. We are committed to ensuring that all categories of payees receive regular payments. It is not their fault that our income does not match our expenditure. We remain committed to ensuring that no category of payee is neglected, committed to introducing a new, equitable, affordable, and sustainable scheme, and I must, as the CEO, extend our appreciation to the thousands of claimants, lawyers, healthcare providers, caregivers, corporate suppliers, and creditors who've patiently participated and continue to participate with the fund. In impossible and unreal circumstances, with your furniture, your computer removed, with bank accounts attached, with a requested not yet paid of over 8 billion rand, a liability, a deficit of 145, which has grown to over 160 billion rand. In these impossible and unreal circumstances, I recognize the team of employees I work with who make possibilities a reality on a daily basis to over 2,000 payees each day despite these challenges. Chairperson, members of the committee, thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Watson. Anything from you?
No, thank you, Chair. I think the point really to drive home is that the fund is insolvent and getting worse, but operationally there's no question that 97% spent on claims is a sure sign that the funds are deployed for the benefit of the taxpayer. But the point I always like to make is that at 145 billion rands, it's no longer that the Road Accident Fund cannot afford the REF Act. The country cannot afford the REF Act. Put that into context. The 145 billion, if that was a department, a national department, it would be in the top five of the departments that spend. I'm talking here basic education, I'm talking health, and I think that should go some way in making us all wake up that it cannot continue as it always has. Now, the one point I also want to address is the issue of, because it has arisen in this committee and the CEO touched on it, the issue whether it would be in anybody's interest to slow down in terms of our performance. You made a perfect example that's like saying people must come and work 2 days in a week. The board cannot really support any slowing down of work. We believe it's unethical. It goes against principles of best practice regarding corporate governance. We cannot pay people to underperform. Granted, we will not support a situation where we go out and hire more. But I'll give another example why we believe this is the way to go. 4 or 5 years ago when I joined this fund, we were sitting at about 6-7 billion rand in the bank. And in this portfolio committee, there was a discussion where PRASA were motivating to be allocated the funds that were sitting in the Road Accident Fund account. Now, that was a result of underperformance where claims were not being processed and it was interpreted as cash in the bank and a much lower liability. It wouldn't serve this country to present any position that suggests that the fund is fully funded, because it's not. And that's what slowing down will be. It's no coincidence that since we have worked to run that positive balance down, there have been two increases in funding, the 50 cents and the more recent one. That those increases are a function of an organization that performs, that gets clean audits, and the board is quite happy to support that approach. We cannot pay people to slow down in terms of their work. But that's the reason we say we're starting to look at Section 21. It's not a nice place to be in, but it's not like we have a lot of options. What the board appreciates is that the CEO and the financial team are working hard given the constraints. And we have seen communication among attorneys themselves, where some have actually acknowledged that the way the fund is managing this delicate situation is ultimately the best possible way. And it's just the 20 that are a problem. That's all I have to say for now, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members. There we are. The presentation has been made, very elaborate, to just indicate to us the challenges that the institution has. And I think I also agree that productivity is the critical word, that we cannot slow down productivity based on the fact that there are challenges that we, from time to time, we come across. I'm going to recognize hands, starting with Honorable Humsinga. I'll be coming this way. Honorable Humsinga, Honorable Mlaudzi, that way.
Advocate.
Oh, I'm sorry, Advocate. Honorable members, Honorable Mlaudzi was just admitted. Is it not in Gauteng? In Polokwane, as an advocate. So congratulations, honorable member. It's something that we really take pride in. So advocate, you will follow Honorable Humsinga. Honorable Humsinga.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Dr. Bingo and Watson, for the presentation and really for the effort that you're putting in to make this work under very difficult circumstances. Your presentation then also reveals the struggle that you've had on the journey till now, but certainly there hasn't been no interventions. One of these interventions, I recall a calculation that spanned over annual reports and strategic and financial reports from 2008 to 14, which I used as a sort of background survey to get grip on what's going on. Then we saw the intervention that I'm alluding to of an Amendment Act, and in this Amendment Act there was a serious intention then on the one side to reduce claims, referring to general damages claims, and which in presentations at that stage, which you did, indicated that would be more or less 5.8% or 58% of the claims. 3.9 million, if I recall correctly. Over the same period, which then was 2008 to 14, we also saw increase in fuel levy, and adding to the current increases of fuel levy, we might in total be closer to 20, even exceeding 20%, running from 2008. So on the one side, we had a decrease of claims, and on the other side, we had a serious increase of fuel levy, but we don't see the effect of that. And now we approached with another amendment, and even with a bigger under design wraps. So what did that particular intervention gain us? Why did we have to say yes to that amendment bill, why didn't we see the financial benefits to the fund that was argued from 2008 towards 14? Where do we see the benefits of the decision that we were part of in allowing that amendment in those years? You gave us some very useful definitions on the second page. Sorry, the third page, if you take the first one as part of it, with the RNYP and the RIT. But the most important definition that I would like to see would be one that expresses the amount of claims submitted yet not receiving offers. Because in a recent press briefing, you alluded that more than $5 billion was spent on legal costs. But it's legal costs that the RAF engaged in. And as I look at court rolls in just getting to grip about what is the content of these cases that go to court, most of them, a high percentage of these cases, no offers have been made. In other words, you've exceeded the 120 days, not making any offer, and that being the reason why you have to defend these cases in court. Why can't you just make an offer according to what the Act says within 120 days and then get into a form of an agreement with a representative or victim and manage it in that way? So I would have liked to see a definition that would give an expression and indication of how many court cases we have where no claim has been made. In other words, where people are just waiting and waiting and waiting. My third question is also relates to the agreements, because I am aware of agreements that have been made with RAF by victims, but where those agreements are simply not honored. Payments start to flow for 1 month, 2 months, and then suddenly there's a break. Now, what can the victim then do? Nothing else but then to approach a legal course, and then we go to the courts, something which we would rather not want to do. Why isn't there positive communication from RAF if there was an agreement around this, so that at least the victim and the caretakers understand what's going on if there's a sudden breakdown of flow of payments? My fourth question, Chair, why don't you, something more sort of in a practical sense around RITs that I just thought of, why don't you adjust your payment system to provide for these small amounts of RITs? Liability on these RITs are minor in relation to the bigger picture, and why does the whole process have to come to an halt because of this? And the last question, since you are so cash constraint and stressed, and you know, we also receive a lot of queries of people waiting for months and months, but then I see your involvement in the Comrades Marathon. How can you still justify handing out these sponsorships and expanding on employees and increasing expenses, especially around sponsorships? Thank you, Chair.
Advocate.
Thanks, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation and the honourable members. I want to base my argument of what you presented, Dr. Watson. You said on the background at slide number 5, the last sentence, that it is perceived as a poorly run business. And as I think it's not a perceived, it's true. RAF is a poorly run institution. Okay, I will base that on the legality point of law. If you go to section 24, 6A of the Act, all of this, your presentation, it was not necessary if you followed the law. Because Section 24, 6A, it says no claim shall be enforceable by legal proceedings commenced by a summon served on the fund or agent before the expiry of 120 days. That's what my learned colleague was saying. So then all of these challenges you mentioned on the slide 5, claim expenditure exceed income, increase in the value of legal cost, increasing number of writs, unable to pay as you go, is because you didn't follow the law. Because should you entertain the matter on the immediate claim submission within 120 days, there were no need to have this legal cost. There were no need to go to the REITs. There were no need for balloon the expenditure. That's why I said it's poorly run. It's not a perceive. It's true. So when we go to slide number 6, most of the expenditures here, you look expenditure claim of expenditures which is now at 28 billion. All of this was not going to happen if Section 24 was followed. So all the cash shortfall, these billions we are talking here, all of them, I won't mention them because there are many, is because of the poorly run but not following the law. The parliament has made the law for you to run that entity. But if you're not following the law, then the legal cost will be ballooned. So the other question I want to ask directly is about the in your presentation, there is no strategy to save litigation costs. There is no strategy. You are just crying, hey, litigation are ballooning. What strategy are you having in place to arrest this a high cost growing up? Because the act is there. Why don't you go and do the right thing? So, and another thing which is I can't understand, why the legal risks increase while the amount of claim were reduced after the amendment of 2008, which you know it very well, where we cut, the claims were cut, these small claims were cut not to be submitted. So why legal risks are growing when you cut the claims by 35%? You see, that's a question we want you to tell us about. And you said you have a shortfall of 8.6 billion. But you are getting 3 billion per month. So this shortfall of 8.6 billion while you are getting 3.6 or 3 billion per month, how do you quantify that? And how many claims now are due to prescribe to go on? As the chairperson said, the fund is insolvent and it's getting worse. So how many are they coming in number and the value thereof? And the average claim of direct claims, how many in average per month, maybe per year since you started this process of the direct claims? How do you, again, you said 97% of the expenditure is on the claim. Three is maybe it's on the salary and everything. So you see it started from 96, now it's going to 97, it's going to be maybe 98. So then the one question which I don't understand, we, as parliament here, we didn't even get the increment the previous financial year because
of the nature of the economy, and we agree with the president. But look at you as the chief executive officer, earning more than a president, your salary, your even the bonuses per year, more than a million bonuses. But you said you don't have money. There is no sense for the poor people not to get their money while people they are making self-enrichment. We understand this Department of Transport was misled by the former minister. Now the whole department, the entities, they're in trouble because of the former minister who was dealing with water, SEMA, everything. But for you, as a CEO, accounting officer, how do you quantify that? What are you feeling to support the fund? Another thing, you said you don't have money and everything, but you're all over advertising in the very expensive paper, the whole paper. Sunday, I saw the advert of Rough on the Road in the Sunday newspaper. And that expenditure is too much. In the rugby field, we're advertising there because we have money, but we don't have money to pay the poor people. Thank you, Chairperson, for now. I have some follow-up questions. I will wait for the response. Let me pause here.
Thank you very much. Honorable Sibande.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, the disadvantage to come after the learned people, the advocate. But, Chairperson, I won't respond directly to anybody, but just to sensitize our colleagues, to remind the people where is this wrath coming from. I'm a little bit perturbed when the finger is pointed to the former minister, which misled. In which sense? We mustn't forget that the very same wrath, like the background which is given, that the legacy that is from 1942, then also the claims which started from 1982, something like that. And of course, these claims were very, very biased. To an extent, there was a case which was claimed, remember very well, whereby the very same RAS was given a task to appoint sexual commission to verify those differences which were there in the past. I don't know where the poor minister coming from then. Because the poor minister came after the sexual commission was appointed. The reason why the question which we must ask ourselves, why the sexual commission was appointed? To do what? To correct what? Because there were problems. I'll repeat again. There was a chap those people, they were people who were claiming with foreign currency instead of local currency, claiming billions of rands. We kept quiet on that one. We forgotten that things were happening. And then we point a finger to the poor minister. I don't know who's that minister. I'm not defensive, but these are the facts which happened. But we are forgetting now. And then again, you see, my question then to Raf is that, may you please maybe take us on board so that we can move in the same path. I remember, it doesn't scare me when some lawyers argue some of the things, because we do have contacts with lawyers outside who still have some interest. Because our problem started whereby some of the lawyers were challenging the RAF not to pay direct to the people who are victims, but to pay people through them. That's where was the problem. That's where we encountered a lot of challenges. I don't know whether this, because to an extent, some of those lawyers, their contract, we don't know when it started, and we don't know when it's going to be terminated. I'm not sure whether it's yet terminated. Those are the cracks of the matters, where the people are still chowing money unnecessary. May you please take us on board so that we can discuss on that one. That if these people are still chowing money, what do we do? Because those were the contributing factors of this budget. The short, who were causing the shortfall? Getting money for what? Doing what? That's where the thing which is, I mean, which was very itching in terms of the RAF. And then also, I will pose another question that in your last bulletin on page 5, the side of the business challenges, unable to pay as you go. May you please clarify us that how do we address a situation whereby maybe the claim is prolonging from your side, while the principle is that people who take long time to claim, sometimes they are going to be affected by the period when they claim, vice to this one. And then also, to assist us then on the serious matters about, I'm subject for correction, when you were giving your input, you said there is an increase, I think of 9% or 1 point something from the fuel levy. Does it solve the problem? Or where is the problem? What can be, so that you can see what can be done. And then also, if you can also assist us, because there were a lot of conflicts between the previous lawyers, that's what we know, and this one with the sheriff. What is your relationship with the sheriff? Because why I'm raising that one? If you do have a positive relationship with the sheriff, your own risk management is supposed to sensitize you if there is a red robot which is coming. Your own risk management supposed to alert you when there is a problem. But, Chairperson, I know that there are people who wanted to embarrass RAF and the current government, while it's them who wanted to drain the resources unnecessary. And then coming back to the board, Chairperson of the board, may you please assist us. Your statement, you said a board cannot pay people who are underperformed. Are we still having people who are not performing? Because there are two separate issues then. The issue which you are raising with the people who are underperforming, and the challenge which is facing the RAF itself, where there is no money. Because we can point the finger to the people, even dismissing them, that they are not performing, while there is no money. What are we expecting them to do if there is no money? If you maybe clarify us on that one. And then you said, you also indicated about the issue of Section 21, that we must also look at Section 21. May you please elaborate so that we can check how does it help us or how it does not help us. If it's Section 21. Chairperson, allow me to come back later on so that I can give other people a chance. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Kako.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good day to everyone. Let me thank the board chair and Dr. Watson with the presentation and also the fact that they honored our invitation. The reason why we invited them as a committee is what we heard over the media, that they are not paying out their claimants. And it's good that they are communicating with the claimants, because it's where we got that they have a challenge. Coming to my questions, let me first say it out that I still echo our words that you must not slow down in performance. You must perform. That it is said that you are poorly running the institution. I'm tempted to say you are running an entity that was poorly established. Let me put it that way. Because it is just a scheme that was established then. And by that time, there were less vehicles, there were less wrongdoers, there were less victims. Today, there's more wrongdoers, there's more accidents, so there's more victims. What I also want to check is whether you have a legal team within. If it is there, you must try to sharpen it up if you have it inside the institution. I am worried about a person who is seated there who has made a claim not being represented, because I don't think that person is, if you claim this year and you are unable to pay that person and maybe you pay him or her after 2 years, I was trying to check if there is something. If I claim 200,000, I was entitled to get 200,000 this year, how much will I get in the next maybe 2 or 3 years? I also want to highlight the challenge that there are those, even that you are not making any profit, you are a business, you are running a business that is not making any profit. That's not a business, it's just an organization. But there are those that are making money out of the scheme. Let's not forget those people. There are those that are doing business with you, forgetting that there is this one who is a victim who is seated there. And these ones that are making business with you are the ones, I think, that are creating this challenge that we're facing now. I also want to check and challenge those that will be having policy conferences to have a clear resolution around the issue of RAF. There was that proposed amendment bill. I'm not sure where are we now about that, because I think it was intended to solve some of the problems that we are encountering now. But we'll push whatever that we can do, maybe through our policy conferences or whatever, so that the problems that we have today at least can be solved in the near future. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and thank you very much to the presentation, Dr. Watson. Just a few questions from my side and the Chair. If I start where the Chair ended, unsustainability, conclusion that 145 billion is unsustainable going forward. But then the question, in posing that question or making that statement, he left it there to say something has to be found. And I was wondering whether the board in their sessions, did they attempt to answer that particular question in going forward? But let me leave it there. But say, Chair, that I think the question of unsustainability and that debate, it's a broader debate, I suspect. It is not only the debate of RAF. It can't be a debate that ends there. It's quite a broader debate that really the country has to be seized with, because that's it goes to the heart of what is to be done going forward. But Chair, quick questions, Doctor. I think you did allude to a number of issues, legislative, regulations, act, and so on. The question that I have is, what are the implications for non-compliance with a kind of statutory requirement going forward? This is quite, because I think I don't know what the AG says, but of course the audit is a clean audit and so on, but that question about the statutory requirement and its implication to the organization is one that perhaps we as a committee as well, perhaps we need to look closely to it. What it means with respect to our role as an oversight body. So an oversight body that has authority to say, in our oversight decision, we supervise that things must be done this way to avoid this. Because I think if we go to the oversight, probably that's our responsibility as a committee. We can't only listen if we are oversighting this body, including the department. That means we have to supervise that it can't continue this way. Something else has to happen. Certainly, there's a big issue around statutory failures, the non-compliance of it. The next question that flows from that, Doc, is could the non-compliance with the statutory requirement activate some surprised action or class action that may actually drop the guillotine in a back door, coming through the back door? Now, if there is a continuous problem of the orders, this order, that order, freezing, are you not worried that freezing may end up with some surprises? The surprises, because if you continue to use the, and we all recognize insolvency, even though it deals with the status of cash, can it go higher? Can we, or maybe put differently, are we out of the possibility that some body quite rough, not friendly, could come around the next day and say, you know what, this insolvency actually means bankruptcy, and say, I now want to approach the court, and I want the court to have a say on the whole host of non-compliance, using your own words in terms of insolvency, 145 billion in a kind of deficit. It's a huge amount of money in this current situation. So I'm really asking the question that you may not necessarily have prepared yourself to answer, that requires a collective wisdom, collective engagement, a ponder around them to say, are we staring in a barrel of a gun here? Somebody may pull a trigger at any moment then we're in more serious problem. Or that's unlikely. Maybe that may be seen, those may be drastic, people won't want to go the drastic way, but I'm just asking these questions because nothing could be impossible, particularly when you have this kind of litigation that goes on and on like this, and you've got surprises. We may be sitting here, there may be another attachment. As an attachment is always said, well, it's because RAF has not complied with the provision of the Act, and therefore we have no other option but to attach. It justifies the action by somebody there who's quite not reasonable, who just want to probably just milk the system. And then he justified, action justified, by simply that either 120 days there's not been a proper kind of negotiation, or there has not been necessarily a full compliance with what the Act suggests you do. So really, I'm asking questions. And I'm saying somehow we need to be worried, Chair. We need to be seriously worried. And we need to have a serious talk. And we have also a responsibility that we may be caught up in the middle of this if we do not necessarily exercise the oversight that may gravitate towards permanent solution. We are told today that this is unsustainable. What do we say? So I think, Chair, now maybe let me end here by saying, I don't know, Doctor, the 8.6 billion that is waiting for payment, and if you look at the deficit, what would you say the oldest in the pile? What is the oldest in the pile? How old he would be? Claimant may also maybe a unfair questions if you haven't prepared for that question. What is the oldest? Which may be an activator to some of the things I was raising before. So, Chair, we may not also have, we didn't have this information before the meeting started. Now we are actually presented with quite a serious questions for us to consider. I don't necessarily want to suggest that the doctor has all the answers to these questions, because I think we need to actually sit seriously around the table. And I think that this discussion can't be concluded unless the executive is part of it. Because I don't think that the good doctor would be able to provide answers himself. There must be a collective. The advocate is here. Advocate is here. Perhaps they also have a little bit pondered on this matter. They have some answers to it. So I think we have a three-sided table, serious conversation about it. That's what must be done. Because if we say the system should change, which is a political responsibility as a country here in terms of program, it has to happen quick and fast. You've got to cut, amputate the leg, if the doctor would say like that, if the leg is something is a problem, then you have to amputate the leg. They say, well, you have to cut it now, not tomorrow, in order to save life. So probably we're getting closer to that discussion. Chair, let me, I'm perhaps lamenting, I'm not making sense. But it is because of the magnitude of what is being presented here. It's fairly not small. And I would like to say to my colleagues who are having an X on this, is not going to solve the problem. what's going to solve the problem is probably more kind of thinking cap that we need to wear, that find the solution and moving forward. Because my worry, doctor, is accumulation. The deficit is not going down. It's increasing by the year. As we sit here, if we finalize this particular financial year, we may be shocked by another figure. And it in fact grows by the tens. So let me end there, Chair, and say that perhaps we need to have another round of conversation that's probably much more serious. I mean, we've inherited 1948, we've inherited the system. Now we need to change it. But if it takes long, we're running in more trouble. As a country. Actually, it's a country that is running into trouble. How is the Minister of Finance going to find the deficit?
Are there, Honorable Masangani, Honorable De Freitas, are there issues from your side? You okay? Honorable De Freitas? You okay? You want to represent him? Amandla. Honorable Humsinga, you'll be followed by Honorable Mlaudzi, and then Honorable Sibande. Then we will be closing questions. We'll take it back to the chairperson of the board, Dr. Bengu.
Thank you, Chair. I also want to caution that we don't fall into a history trap here of 1948 and 1940 what. We heard here in this presentation that there was a 6 billion rand surplus in 2014, full stop. 6 billion rand surplus in 2014. We don't need to go to 1940 and what. I would like to ask questions particularly on direct claims, since it's also, you're on record, Dr. Watson, for saying that in the vicinity of 35% of claims are of the direct nature, as you say, and that it would save substantial money in terms of the fund. Now, this saving, do you calculate this saving due to the useful mechanism of prescription? What happens with the cases that have prescribed that was done on a direct claim basis? And most importantly, what support do you give these victims that have decided, since you are offering this, that they would put their claim directly with you? What support do you give them once this claim has prescribed? And most importantly, what statutory act do you base this practice on?
Thanks. Look, thanks, Chairperson. One of the questions was asked about the 35% direct claims, but I want to ask again about the legislation, Section 246A, that the cost is high because of party-to-party cost. You know it very well. And this party-to-party cost ordered by court can be avoided by following the law. So, look, at each and every court, now, I have a court roll here of Pretoria, of Northern Gauteng. Per day, there are 400 or 300 cases which are appearing, even here in Cape Town High Court. Maybe there are 100 or 150 per day. And this, out of 400 of these, all of them, the Road Accident Fund hired the lawyers came to court and settled them on that day. And they have to pay the cost. Why don't you settle immediately when you get the claim? Why do you wait for 120 days to expire, the whole year to expire? And out of these 400 cases, it's only 5 cases
which is going to be heard by the court. The rest, 395, let's settle. And when they are settling, lawyers are there. They must be paid. So we can avoid this party-to-party cost. This is the courtroom. 400 cases per day. What about per month? Okay? Another thing which I wanted to know. I wanted to know the highest money paid to the victim through this direct payment. Because I visited one of the family where they had an accident in Limpopo in Venda there. They were given 150,000 rand direct pay. Finish. That money is finished. They are suffering. Because they didn't go in a proper way, the rehabilitations, go to the hospital for... They were given that money. They were happy when they were given that money. But that money is very little, Mr. Watson. 150,000 people are suffering. You see? Which is not fair. That's what I wanted to know. How much did you, the highest you paid to these poor victim people? Because it's like you are saving the money of the RAF on the expense of the victim. Because the poor victim now, they don't have anything, they don't have lawyer. You go there, you rob them, hey, direct pay, 80,000, 100,000. It's nothing. They have families and everything. They are suffering now. Unfortunately, we are pro-poor. We will talk for the poor. How much do RAF on the road cost? Because this RAF on the road is an expenditure of its own. And your legislative mandate is to compensate the road accident victim. But we are busy spending the money in the rough on the road, busy funding the marathon and everything. It is against the law, Chairperson and Doctor. Do what the law says. This parliament is here not for you to work through common sense. You must work according to the statute. Then we won't have this problem. So I will prefer, Chairperson, if possible, we must have an oversight. We go to the courts where these RAF matters appear. You'll see the lawyers of the and the advocate of the RAF coming to settle the matter. When they have 120 days, they didn't do that. And if they settle within 120 days, it's them and the lawyer who's bringing that claim. But if they settle on the date of the court, they pay everything, which is more. That's why this bill is escalating. So I don't want to be part of the portfolio committee which will just say yes when things are wrong. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, first of all, I'd like to thank my colleagues when they talk about that we mustn't think discuss or we mustn't worry ourselves about the things of 1942 and the like. Yes, I agree. But let us, whenever you go anywhere, there is a bridge which you must pass. You can't just jump and fly without passing a bridge. Here is the bridge. I'll repeat again. We all concerned about transformation. Of which the transformation, they say charity begins where? It must start with those lawyers which were serving there. So, at the other hand, we are saying we mustn't talk about the things which happened in the past. While these lawyers, this group of lawyers started from which year? You are saying we mustn't talk about 1982, 1942. This company of these lawyers which we're talking about started from when? For how long are they going to be there? Who signed their contract? For how long? That is my problem. Because the issue is, again, another issue. What was our concern, which was the results which came after the sexual commission, was that this approach was very skewed, was racially skewed. I'll repeat again, I didn't want to say that earlier on. It was racially skewed, whereby some of the people are still fighting for the carcass now. They see there is a carcass there, they wanted to take it. Because my problem is one, to me I've got an experience
because normally if we are doing an oversight, we are fighting for each and every entity that they must have a system of marketing themselves, of taking themselves to the people where the people they are. I can't accuse you by marketing yourself. You must market yourself in order for people to know exactly if they wanted to claim, where to go and how to claim. Unlike staying there in your cocoon, in your offices, big offices in Santin with air cons. Go to the people. Market yourself. That's what you agreed. Because it's part of your responsibility. And then again, Chairperson, you see, I agree. I don't have any qualm with this deficit that we must have a remedy. That's where we're supposed to discuss that how to get rid of this deficit. How must we assist? Because from my legal experience, this is not for the first time the RAF raised an issue that they are running short of this money. Not for the first time. Not this year. I don't know how many years they were raising the very same thing. And to me, you see, there is a statement which was raised by one of our colleagues to say, Ofish, that is a point to say, saving money on the behalf of the victims. At the same time, the contradiction was saying, it's bad, unlike those people who were claiming to be lawyers, claiming to save money and putting money, if they were followed up, they would say the money is saved, very well invested. Invested without my knowledge, while I'm the victim. Coincidentally, my friend was also a victim, if I can show you, because I was subject for a plastic surgery somewhere, somehow. Somebody saved money for me. While I don't know, well, I never saw it, even now. No. Those who were involved, who saw, who realized which things happened to them, they will understand it better than a person who just preached about it. He didn't see anything. So, Chairperson, what we are saying is that let us have an amicable solution. If we wanted to help with whatever, because I'm subject for correction, there were times whereby the very same rough people, they were requesting about the issue of fuel levy. We discussed it several times, the issue of fuel levy, so that as it will form part of the things which is going to rescue their deficit. But to accuse REF that is paying people directly, that is something else. Because we never signed, we never gave, as a portfolio committee, this portfolio committee, we never gave those lawyers permission to extend their contracts. We keep quiet about those contracts as if it's normal. They must chow money skewed as they are taking back transformation, not allow transformation to be transformed. Because to me, to pay the people directly, it was part of the transformation that people must feel that at least if I was injured, I benefited from that 1, 2, 3, unlike before, which never happened. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Doctors. I think you will decide who will be responding to what. But I think the critical issues that have been raised here by honorable members, as a committee, we should be able to really look into, and especially on matters of oversight, they become very, very critical. Because how do you monetize RAF? What are the things that we should be able to say as a portfolio committee will be able to do so that we're able to assist? You have gone this road this far, and they say you can only travel the farthest if we're together. The executive is here, Advocate Masumbuka must also be able to say what are the strategic inputs that the executive is making towards making sure that in the end, RAF can be able to really be sustained, because if there's 140 plus billion that should be paid, it's really not going to be workable. As people were talking, I'm just thinking, you've got social development, you've got a Department of Health, you've got all these other stakeholders, which some of them are working towards the very same objective that you're working, your housing issues, as has been spoken here, to say you give 150,000 rand, what happens? That person must still eat, must have a house, must have all these other things. How do we cooperate with these other organizations which are there? What are the things that can be offloaded from RAF so that we are able to really load them into the other institutions which can be able to assist to ease off the burden that you are having? Dr. Bengu, let me give it to you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I will go first because I think most of the questions fall within the domain of the CEO, but they are clearly board questions here, and one or two areas where I think I didn't come across clearly, or there is a misunderstanding of what I meant. One of the areas here is about the 6 billion that was in the bank. I think this was in reference to the fact that let's not go too far. I was making there is that there was 6 billion rand in the bank as cash. That obviously excludes the liability that was already in the tens of billions. So even at that point, you were looking at a massively negative situation financially. But what that 6 billion means, it was the 6 billion that was in the context of a company that had such huge backlogs, of a company that had 450,000 claims that were sitting. We didn't even know at times how many claims were in the system. I can replicate that 6 billion in 6 months if I stop paying. That is my point. So it's very disingenuous to pretend that that was made in the context that the fund was cash positive, or rather financially positive at the time. And that is clearly understood, I'm sure, but it's raised to make a point that is just clearly not an honest one. Now, the other point I want to refer to...
Can I just object here about the comment that it's disingenuous? I mean, surely that's not the spirit of this engagement.
I apologize, I withdraw, Chair. Yeah. In using that word. But the other point I want to take, Chair, is I appreciate the opportunity to discuss the issue of the salary or the package of the CEO, because it gets raised all the time, and sometimes in Parliament, and I sit there frustrated because I can't respond, but there's no understanding of the history. There are points that I will raise here that are very clear for anybody to verify. The opening statement I want to make is that the policy or the strategy, the remuneration strategy that the board of the Road Accident Fund employs is in line with best practice regarding executive remuneration anywhere. And that is the type of remuneration that is performance-driven, and we believe that is actually the reason why you are seeing the performance of the fund. We moved from 53% of targets met when we started. And that year, I already was the chairman, and I remember the fights we had with the union because we did not pay bonuses. 5 years later, 90% of increasingly tighter KPIs are met, and this is why we pay bonuses. To be specific about Dr. Eugene's package, when Dr. Eugene joined the fund, he was started on a guaranteed package that was equal to what he was on at the company that employed him before. I can refer you to the annual financial statement of the government employees medical scheme of around 2011. You read what he got that year, and I will give you confirmation that that was equal. It was a lateral move for someone who was so much in demand. Eugene's appointment was delayed by 11 months because even cabinet had arguments whether he should leave GEMS to come to REF. Now, we still managed to negotiate a deal where it was a lateral move. Now, that is based on high performance, the bonus that you see on any day is verified by the AG that his tasks are achieved. And if he does not achieve the said tasks, the fund will not pay a cent, as I say we did in 2011 when it was 53%. Now, what does it mean? It means it's a remunerative strategy that says Eugene can do nothing about the 145 billion because it doesn't fund the road accident fund. As the board, what is within his control is the operational performance, and we repeat that the road accident fund is among the very best run organizations in the private and public sector, and I know this. My background is in high transaction environments in terms of claims. Now, once again, something that you can verify. The board was not a soft touch here. In 2016, the total package of the CEO, which is the guaranteed and bonus, is still less than the package his predecessor got when he left the fund in 2011. And that's 4 years later. And you can see that it is not true what it seems like. Now, would I have done it differently? I certainly wouldn't, because I can find a CEO who will accept R1 million, but I can assure you the state, the taxpayer would be so much worse given the entity that we are talking about here. So the issue, Chair, is that when the CEO's total package seems to be high, it has to be seen with how much in rand sense was saved in any particular year. And it can be complicated, but I ask you to look just purely on savings on legal costs, and you will see that you're comparing to tens of billions of rand. Now, the point in summary to close this out is that Eugene made his sacrifice when honorable members, and obviously quite understandably, say they forego increases. It's actually commendable without a shadow of doubt. I'm saying we got him to make the sacrifice up front when he went, when he came onto the fund on a lateral basis financially. And that, if you look at, you speak to any expert in remuneration, you are looking at about at least something between 20% premium from just moving from one job to another. The other issue I want to talk about, a question that was directed to me, what I meant by paying people who are underperforming. The point I was making here was that we really do not support slowing down of operations, as it, we already have 2,500 people and they must work. So it was really more from a high-level perspective. But granted, in any organization, there are people who are not performing, but performance management contract is that they do not get bonuses, and there is a way of working them out of the organization at that basic level. And the issue of the Section 21 and is that the point I can make here, I want to link this to the question by Honorable Ramatlakane about what is the board doing. If one looks at it, the Section 21 thing issue, I mean, are we at risk? Barrel of the gun, I think that's the words used. One can say that this actually has started on a micro level. This reads the action of the sheriff. That's exactly what has happened. I'm not getting paid. I'm going into the law. The question is, at what point do we reach the tipping point where enough of the people say this? The question, I think, is that it's a valid question, but those that who are our creditors understand that if they went that route, two things will happen. The fund will probably say, for every 1 rand we owe, we can only afford to pay 5 cents. And the other alternative, of course, is that they must go and recover the money from the people who caused the accidents. And I have no doubt that our creditors are much better off and prefer the situation as it stands to continue. But the issue of looking at Section 21 is in line with everything else we do, which is constantly working with the Department of Transport to be a pay in the Treasury. It's about looking at the issues that we can't control. Ultimately, the best solution is for South Africans to just drive properly, and we have accidents, but we are at the top of the league of accidents, and we can't control that as the Road Accident Fund. It's about a national strategy that avoids triple dipping, because if I'm in an accident and I'm driving a car at work, I can claim from the fund, I can claim from the compensation fund, I can claim from Social Security for the same accidents. It's a national strategy too. What are we doing about that? Now, Oral Ramatlakana, I suspect there are parts of it that CEO might want to tackle if I've left out. But the issue is that it's a reality. We just think at this point it's probably unlikely, purely because it would actually serve our creditors worse. But we have to advise the Department of Transport, which is why we're constantly looking at issues like Section 21. Now, on the question regarding that direct claimants are shortchanged, that is, it's a perception that the board always tries to deal with. We accept that it comes from a good place, from honorable member in asking if the members are not victims, are not shortchanged, but I can assure you that before you fight for them, the board does. On a quarterly basis, we commissioned that the statutory actuary must always present to us the numbers that show the average payouts for direct claimants as opposed to represented claimants. And we can back that up, but it's something that we are clearly monitoring, that the savings is really on the legal expenses side, but the benefits, they really are not shortchanged. And I think I will pause here unless the CEO wants me to come in, but those are things, are the issues that directly board answers this.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, members of the committee. I think let's deal with some of the answers. I'll do them in order based on how they came. I'll try to limit myself to the questions. The Amendment Act reduced volumes of general damages. That's a narrow example. We shouldn't just look at the volume. We should look at the cost. The Amendment Act said non-serious general damages are excluded, to only latch onto the part assuming there's a reduced volume and ignore the fact that the average value now increases because you're dealing with more expensive ones, I think is narrow in its looking. In our last trip to Parliament, I presented, as I always do, Chairperson, our annual report. I showed you this chart, so I don't want to make it look like I'm pulling out new information. It will tie into some of the questions another member of the committee also asked. But basically, I showed you over a five-year period what has happened to the prevalence and value of claims. If you recall the way I did it, I said in 31 March we paid 33 billion rand. 5 years before that, 2011-12, we paid 12.5 billion rand. 54,000 rand was the average, went up to 143,000. I then showed you the detail, and I made this point explicitly. I said for general damages, the total spend has increased by over 100%, from 3.9 billion rand 5 years ago to 8.7 billion rand. I mentioned, because of the Amendment Act, the average value of those claims has increased because you're dealing with fewer, even though the volumes reduced. And that's what you see. You're spending 100% more. Your volumes are reduced by about 50%, and it's the value plus the legal cost related to the contestation of the general damages by going to the HPCSA. So, Chair, I think we shouldn't look only at one element of some of these queries. While I'm on this slide, it's a five-year view. Another question was, it was more of a comment accusing us of wasting money on legal costs. I said, let's look at it. So if you recall, we spent 33 billion rand last financial year. 5 years ago, we spent 12.5 billion rand. Then we go to legal cost. So what do you see? You see that for the plaintiff, the average value of legal costs has grown from 38,534 rand to 120,385. That is not CPI increases. If we then look at the volumes, interestingly, like general damages, your volume of claims has reduced. So although the RAF does indeed fill the court role, although the RAF is one of the largest defendants in the courts, although there are many accidents, we firstly can't argue that there are more and more legal cost claims. You see the five-year view they're reducing. Secondly, we can't argue that it's just a matter of the RAF because you see how the increased value has increased. Thirdly, on this issue of legal cost, Chairperson, we shouldn't neglect the fact that we are the defendant. We cannot wish away action brought by a plaintiff. And I think that is a very important point for me to make. If I come back then to the second set of questions, the fuel levy increases. Although we got 50 cents, although we got 9 cents, if you average them out, we're not keeping up with real inflation. Real inflation would be in excess of at least CPI plus 2. If you levy 154 cents, you're looking at give or take 12 to 13 cents a year every year. And because that's not what we get, it doesn't make a big difference. The new amendment has also introduced additional costs. You will hear in the next presentation about the cost office. The only way for some attorneys to get paid is to take the matter right up to court at the moment. If we look at the definitions, the claims submitted, no offers, we've never pretended the RAF is perfect. We get more claims than even those examples of court rolls you're mentioning. We get 188,000 new claims a year. That's over 715 new claims per day. We have a frozen headcount. We have to watch our administrative expenses. We've spoken about productivity. It would be absurd to assume that we're going to process 188,000 claims within 120 days. In terms of the new act, remember also for general damages, there's maximum medical improvement, ideally assessed 18 months, not 18 days, 18 months after the claim is registered. So the 120 days becomes logistically impossible. We do, however, want to meet the 120 days. Members of the committee will know from our five-year strategic plan, one of our targets is improving litigation management. This committee will note that last year we introduced a target to assess and verify a claim within 60 days, and in our strat plan for this new year, the target is to increase the percentage of claims we assess and give an offer to within 120 days. So it's a point well taken. It's part of our strategy that this committee has seen and knows about. Why can't you make an offer, Chair? It's not right to say we don't make an offer, because the question is phrased that way. We actually make offers on 90% of claims in the financial year. Outside of court, the acceptance rate is a lot better and a great deal of money is saved. In fact, typically an offer outside of court will be settled for 60% of the claim value. Outcome of court itself is about a 10% saving. I'll come to those numbers. But on offers, the point I want to make, this is a factual point, and I think it deals with the way the question was asked. On average, 1.5 to 2 offers are made per court order matter. So it's wrong to make an assumption that there are no offers on court orders. Without a doubt, averages will have standard deviations. So there will be some. We didn't make an offer. It's for us to continue improving. There will be others where we have made repeated offers above 2 offers per claim, and the plaintiff has elected not to accept it, possibly because the incentive to accept is not there. It's a question we're trying to figure out, which is how come offers are accepted out of court for 40% less than the claimed amount that plaintiff wants, and yet only 90% is reduced when we go to court. So we're also trying to get to that point. So it's something, Chair, we will continue to wait, but I think to make an assumption that there are no offers made is wrong. On agreements not honored, Chair, it would be wrong for me not to remember the presentation I just made. We clearly said there are over 2,000 payments made a day, every day. Any disruption today by one of those 20 lawyers setting back 2,000 payees will disrupt the process, and we won't be able to honor what we've agreed to pay. This is why we communicate. This is why we have the press briefings. This is why we get the information out there. On the issue of waiting and waiting, Chairperson, you can't make an offer recklessly. I was asked in the last meeting, I think it's Honorable Member De Freitas, said, where do we say our duty is to investigate claims? Section 4.1b of the Act says the investigation and settling of claims arising from loss or damage. It would be reckless, Chair, for us to offer without having formulated the offer substantively. It would be wrong. I mean, that really would be wrong. So, yes, I accept criticism on not meeting the timing all the time, but I would definitely never endorse a situation where we offer just for offer's sake. That, I think, is wrong. Then there's the issue about adjust for payments dedicated to risk. Chair, in my presentation, I made a point. I made this point. I made it clearly. I said there are over 40,000 writs in the last 3 years, 200 bank attachments. If you prioritize the court orders or the writs or the attachments, you create a perverse incentive. More and more people will do it. If 200 attachments by 20 attorneys set 6,000 people back, can you imagine if we now start incentivizing that conduct? When the 6,000 do what the 20 do, we're smashed. I mean, then it's lights off. And unfortunately, we can't do that, Chairperson. On the Comrades Marathon, Chair, it would be so nice if we were asked a question to say, guys, do you sponsor? Why do you sponsor? Who do you sponsor? When did you sponsor? The Comrades sponsorship is a 3-year sponsorship. It was entered into 4 years ago. As part of our cost containment, remember I mentioned the 100 million rand saving over and above our budgeting, we withdrew the sponsorship budget, but we had a contract which obligated us to fulfill the third and final year of it, which was last year. So if members of the committee want us to promote access, we're going to keep doing it. It's in our strategic plan. It is a strategic objective. But we won't be sponsoring the Comrades Marathon because we've let it go. Not because we think it doesn't work, simply because we too must feel the pain. On the history trap, Chair, I just want to say 1991, before democracy, Melamed Commission of Inquiry, crisis, 1 billion rand deficit. I mean, you've got 9 commissions of inquiry dating back to 1952 or 54 is the first. There's a point where you have to say it's not working, this thing. You know, it's just not working. On direct claims, again, like with the offers, there are direct claims. We are allowed to register these claims. There are those who don't want us to have direct claims. And I understand it. I understand the conflict of interest. I understand that if you are a professional attorney whose business is to register, represent claims, to see the claimants go elsewhere is not a nice thing. I accept that you will oppose it. I have absolutely no qualms with that. But I think if you get upset because they're growing in prevalence, becoming more popular, and now one starts to speak badly about them, that's a different discussion. But firstly, on direct claims, We have a process, we have a policy, we have a law, we comply with it. It's subjected to internal audits, it's subjected to compliance checks, it's subjected to reviews by risk management team. As our chair mentioned, our statutory actuary appointed by the FSB performs quarterly analyses on the average value. Furthermore, we had five actuaries perform an analysis to look at the changes. And there are some categories. It's not convenient to the anti-direct claim argument. There are some categories where we pay a little more on direct claims. The most important one, which doesn't distinguish between income and age, is general damages. And I'm pleased to say five actuaries on 4,000 claims, 3,999 claims, found that we are par for par with represented claims. So when I talk about the saving about direct claims, I'm speaking, and I said so in the presentation, only about legal costs. We do not do direct claims to squeeze out compensation to those claimants. That, I think, is the wrong way to do business. That is not our business. So we're quite comfortable with it. Then, Chair, just on that point, because there's a perception that the direct claims you underpay, and, the lawyers, you pay them the most. So I just want to go back to that presentation. Forgive me if I flip. I think, seeing as I'm here, let me just do this. Let's go back to the legal costs now. We were there. This is in our annual report. This is a five-year view. This is seen by the Auditor General. No one made these things up, and they've been seen by this committee. So look at the legal cost, Chairperson. Now, the claimant's legal cost versus the RAF. I understand one member of the committee doesn't like any of these legal fees, but look, it's a dance we have to do. So last year, we paid, on average, 28,000 Rand per claim to our lawyer. That's the value of procurement. That's why our admin expenditure is less than 3%, because we try and get bang for our buck. On average, the claimant's lawyer got 120,000 Rand. Now, please remember those two numbers, Chair. 28,000, 120. In total, 148,000. Now I'm going to just flick back to the previous slide. Look at the average value of a claim, Chair. The average value of a claim, all claims, was 143,000. It becomes worrisome when the facilitators, the administrators of a system, the intermediary between the client and the output, not intermediary in the sense of a financial services broker, are getting more on average than the person the system exists for. No, Chairperson, that can't be. Even in justice, you will hear the Minister of Justice say, we need to reduce the cost of access to justice. It's expensive. And there is proof. There is absolute proof of how much it is. And Chair, I've said this, please watch it 5 years back. So it's not a new point I'm making now. It's a point that I've been making all along. If I continue, Chair, on the responses, I've covered the direct claims, I clarified the saving. The mechanism of prescription. You know, we were accused 2 years ago about prescription. So sensational. I personally, on my name, have a police case for two claims which prescribed before I worked at the RAF. Okay? That's part and parcel of working in the public sector. But if we look at it, because I take the question from a position of care, like it's asked sincerely. So because it's asked sincerely, what I want to do, I want to just quote a number, Chair, is come back to these numbers. 1 April 2016 to 31 December 2017. So that's quarter 1, 2, 3. That's when you saw me the last time. A total of 173,892 claims had been lodged with the RAF. 38,000 of these were newly registered represented personal claims. 38,636 were finalized personal claims. Because of the duty of care in that question, not because of the 128 direct claims which had prescribed in the last three quarters, 16,015 represented personal claims were repudiated in three quarters, represented by attorneys. So if we talk about prescription, we mustn't narrow it down only to the 128 direct claims. If we believe prescription is wrong, let's aggressively, vociferously act with due care and deal with both direct and represented claims, where the represented claims in the last financial year, Chair, in that PowerPoint I had mentioned, 33,000 had in fact prescribed. And so we must act for those people too. We cannot just sing about the 128. Let's deal with the 33,000 too. On the perception of a poorly run institution, I know publicly we never get a fair shake. But I appreciate that in this committee over the last few years, we've received commendation on how we are turning our performance around. The committee member who left made a good point. We are, as I said in my conclusion, running a business that should not have existed. We are running a business where the intermediary gets more money than the main recipient. We are running a business that's been insolvent since 1981. We're running a business that can't pay as you go. Despite that, performance outputs, audit outcomes, risk management, compliance, FSB reports to Parliament show that we are transformed. We're not perfect. I will never ever suggest we're perfect. But to suggest that we are indeed poor performing, I think, is incorrect. I disagree with that sentiment. Chairperson, if I move along now, there was an issue about litigation strategy. We came on the guise of what we were invited for, which was to talk about bank attachments. We didn't come to speak on litigation. I've mentioned it before, but it's a big part of our business. We're not opposed to litigation. We agree with the sentiment that when somebody litigates, we should be as efficient and effective as we can be. Our strategic plan has litigation measure targets. Cost at a cost level. Our APP then breaks down in this financial year into quality of litigation, before trial, at trial, after trial. We have increased our presence in courts. We meet with the judges. This is feedback at the last presentation to be got. We meet with the judges. We attend pre-trials. We've got managers who attend court. We put in place a panel management SLA, a panel management unit. We penalize our lawyers for poor performance and for waste. We also review the bill of cost. This generated a saving of R1 billion, which is reflected in our financial statements. And we continue to work on it. Are we perfect? No. Are we realizing value? Yes. In the last meeting, Chair, when I was here, I was quoting a number, so let me just say it again. We picked up that of the 14,176 trial matters last year, 15 billion rand was claimed, 16.94 billion rand was claimed, 15.086 billion rand was paid. So the value of going to litigation, if you consider that it's not only the plaintiff view but the defense and their view too, the defense view and the court's application of their mind saved almost 2 billion rand. So, and I had made the point that ideally you don't want to go to court, but if you go to court, go well. Do it as best you can. And I think that almost 2 billion rand saving is proof that we are not just sitting on our laurel. But I take the point, because of our scale, when you have 15,000 trial matters, there's no ways you're not going to have 50 or 100 or 150 where you do badly. I accept it. And when we get told about it, we'll respond. But overall, we are aware of the risk, share your sentiment, and are trying to work on it. Chairperson, I've covered the prescription. The emphasis is both categories. Non-claim expenditure, all of it, salaries, people, computers, air conditioning, marketing, the works, has reduced from 4% to 3%. That's a reduction in 1 in 4, that's 25%. Very few entities will tell you sitting here that they reduced their non-core, non-claim expenditure by 25% year on year and still operate against a tighter APP and strat plan. So I think that's important to note. On the issue of Section 24.6A, why don't you settle? I've dealt with that party cost. There are amendments now to make sure we deal with it. Again, I think I've addressed the issue, including the comment on 120 days. Highest money paid to the victim, I don't know offhand the highest value. I know that the process to determine a payout, direct or represented, is the same in the RAF. The one just excludes the plaintiff's inputs. But the process of arriving at a value is the same, and as we said, we've got independent actuaries to confirm that's the case. Saving money on behalf of the victim, we don't try to squeeze the victim. And as I showed you earlier, it's not like the average RAF claimant is getting a lot of money, whether they are represented by an attorney or not, especially not when the attorney fees exceed the average value paid to the compensator. RAF on the road costs, we manage those. They are part of our admin expenses. They are part of a total budget that's reduced by 25%. RAF direct claims being against the law, we disagree, and we've made our view known. There are multiple ways in which a claim can be registered. The Act is clear. Finger-pointing and sexual, I agree with you. If ever something pains me, Chairperson, it's the fact that the ninth of these commissions of inquiry presented a report in 2002. We've allowed ourselves not to implement that. The question on oversight and accountability, ultimately the best measure of oversight is what you do next. You can get presentations, you can get reports, but it's always going to come down to did you act or did you spur on an action subsequently. And that, I believe, is where we should go. But I think it's time. So we just can't afford the RAF. Taking on board, yes, we should all be on board. We are unable to pay as you go, absolutely. Prescription I've dealt with. Relationship with the sheriffs, we meet them, we engage with them. We try to have a process in place. We accept that there are times that they will attach, auction, remove, sell. But we try to keep the channels going. There's one sheriff, the one responsible for the recent attachments, we don't believe he's acting correctly. We don't believe he's acting in line with the court rules. We certainly don't believe the duplicate attachments are correct either. So we're trying to engage with them directly as well as with the Board of Sheriffs. On Section 21, I think just to show you, Chairperson, I'm almost near the end. Section 21 is a small little clause, but it's an important one. Remember, our primary job is first to indemnify the wrongdoer, not to do good. We indemnify the wrongdoer. Section 21 says, no claim for compensation in respect of loss or damage resulting from shall lie against the owner, driver, employer, if the fund is unable to pay any compensation. So if we can no longer protect the wrongdoer, then it falls on the wrongdoer. It would be a disaster for a wealthy wrongdoer who would now have to pay for their bad actions. And for a poor wrongdoer, unfortunately, they would be condemned to further poverty. Because if you look at who are the biggest recipients of the RAF dispensation, indemnification and compensation, a rich wrongdoer, because he doesn't lose the triple story, a rich person who is affected because they're able to prove a bigger loss. A poor person, if we talk about the allegiance to the poor, is often excluded by the system. We didn't talk about it, but it's a fact of the matter. Despite all the legalistic mechanisms, 40% of people injured in these crashes don't even qualify to be assisted. Yet they're good enough to pay the fuel levy, and that's not right. So if we are pro-poor, before we talk litigation strategies, we should talk about access to the benefit pool. If we then, Chair, just move on, not slowing down. Look, I agree with you, but it's not easy. Our staff, our team can only take so much. Poorly designed scheme, absolutely. That I think is a strong point. We do have a legal team, corporate legal as well as advice on claims, to improve our litigation management, to ensure that what we do in court is good. Our claim teams now have to submit all offers over R1 million to our legal team for a second view, a cursory view, to make sure that the offer is informed. Besides getting an offer out, you want it to be a fair offer that we can justify. Interest on payments is a reality. It accrues on all outstanding payments. Currently, well, in the last financial year, it's a bit under R150 million. Auditor General understands where that money comes from, and it's going to be a cost we incur for as long as there's requests not yet paid. On profit takers creating their problems, I think it's important sometimes to remember the conflicts of interest. You get paid, or there's a microeconomy that gets R6.6 billion, right? Last financial year. One of the questions the committee member said earlier, he started off with a statement that we waste the money because of legal costs. But if you just look at the presentation, Chairperson, the R6.6 billion I'm speaking about, right? If you look at this slide I showed you, you've got claims expenditure 28.63 plus requested not yet paid 10.6. Add these two together, you're looking at about 39.3 billion, right? You with me? 39 billion. Subtract 6 billion legal costs from 39. It still exceeds the money available for claims. So it's not convenient to say it's because of wasted money on legal fees. It's also not right to exclude the link. You have a person or professional who performs a service which is provided for in our Act. Whether we like it or not, it's there, it happens. They perform the service, it costs money, they demand payment. They demand payment, they attach the account and deprive other people of an equal payment. But simultaneously say, these payments are a waste. But it's the payment they demand. So how do you, on one hand, contest the payment saying, no, this is wrong, we shouldn't pay it. But on the other hand, I want it and I want it now. So soon I'll attach your account for it. It becomes hard to reconcile those two lines of thought, Chairperson. Then in terms of marketing ourselves, absolutely, it's in our strat plan. We will continue to market ourselves within the limitations of what we can afford. What is the best information to date is that we go into communities and more people still receive us. Despite all the negativity by those opposed to direct claims, more people are coming in directly and they engage us and it means they believe us and the proof is in the pudding because we've been doing it for long enough. The final set, unsustainability, it is unsustainability. It is unsustainable. It's been unsustainable. I believe the biggest flaw in our application of our minds and our roles since the 50s is not acting on a truth we saw. Non-compliance implication, I think the compliance section 21 would become relevant. You could argue the National Treasury based on section 4 or 5 of our Act is meant to, we're meant to procure all the money we need from them. So you could, somebody could take them on a challenge saying that they are obligated to fund the RAF fully. I'm not sure how successful that's going to be. But I think our biggest exposure really is just not at a litigation level, it's just not being able to pay what we need to pay. No other option but to attach. There are indeed some, but if everybody adopted that approach, it would be the end. The deficit grows constantly. Yes, it does. Yes, it will. It comes down to the issue of design. So, Chairperson, I think I've tried to cover all of these points. But again, as I said in my conclusion, the business should not have worked. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable members, thank you very much. I'm mindful of time that we still have a presentation from the department, but I see a hand or two. I'm going to give you 1 minute. For you to can be able to talk to the issues, but I think there's clarity of mind and clarity of thought into some of the challenges that we had anticipated from the RAF because our concerns was mainly that if you get closed down, it becomes a challenge to those who are definitely aspiring to get a compensation from the road accident fund, and I still maintain that for sure we need to, as has been indicated by one member here, that it is very important that as part of the oversight we need to say how do we make sure that we look into the broad picture of making sure that some of these things don't recur again or happen again. We look at the broad picture as to how do we deal with the analysis and the overall approach of what you are all about. How do we assist in this whole situation to just make sure that we are able to do what the Act terms of you to do. How can we be able to perfect the system? Honorable Humsinga, I saw your hand. I've seen your hand, Honorable Mulaudzi. I am going to give both of you 1.5 minutes so that by midday we're able to go into the presentation from the department.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to just focus on 3 questions that were not answered. Two of the first section of questions would address direct claims. Under the direct claims, I was quite specific in asking, what support do you give claimants and victims under the condition where these direct claims subscribe? What support do you give them? Secondly, what act and what section of the act do you rely on in addressing and handling direct claims? Those 2 questions, please. Specifically the act. Then probably a more broader one, and you had an interesting comment on this relating to the amendment of the 2000 Act, where certain objectives were set out. If you read in the justification of that act and the request around all of that, objectives and all of that, to be effective and efficient and cost-saving and all those objectives. But now today, once we look at that very critically, you do admit that legal cost increased, and then you tell us, to use your own words, we should not just look at one element. What homework was done in the presentation and the benefits promised of that previous amendment act, where actual benefits decreased and your income stream increased due to fuel levies that were boosted up? If you could react to that, thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chairperson. I just wanted to know why the rates increased while immediately after the amendment of 2008, the risk was very low. What is the reason of increasing? Is it not avoiding to use Section 24(1)(6A)? Secondly, you said you're comfortable with the direct claims. How do you feel if a paraplegic gets 25,000 only? I saw the article, one of the paraplegic getting only 25,000 rand. So that person can't work anything. What is 25,000 rand? Are you comfortable with that? Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Sorry, on the first ones, I think there were just so many. What support is given to victims is the same claim procedure. So under Act, you've got the heads of damages. So the types of benefits they would qualify: loss of earnings, loss of support, general damages, funeral benefits if somebody had passed away, as well as medical expenses. We created a dedicated team for direct claimants from origination to management to settlement. We have a post-crash care or rehabilitation team, what we call Pillar 6, who then provides ongoing support to these people to also help them make use of their undertakings. So pound for pound, the only real difference between a direct claim and a represented claim in the RAF, when it prescribes, we rely upon various constitutional court rulings which have shaped our action to deal with condemnation of prescription and also a policy that deals with how we react if a claim has not yet prescribed but we think it is aging along those ways. If it's a represented claim that has prescribed, and based on the numbers I showed you, there are considerably more of those, we direct those people to the Law Society. But at the moment, no one seems to be taking up their cause, and I think it's important somebody does. The Act on Direct Claims, Chairperson, Section 19 of the Act, I've displayed it above you. It says, the fund or an agent shall not be obliged to compensate any person in terms of Section 17, for which neither the driver nor the owner of the vehicle concerned would have been liable, but for Section 21, or if the claim concerned has not been instituted and prosecuted by the third party, that's the injured, the claimant, or on behalf of the third party, by any person entitled to practice as an attorney, or any person who is in the service, or, pardon me, who is a representative of the state or government. So if you look at the first part, if the claim concerned instituted on or by the third party. The third party is the claimant. That's themselves. That's them acting on that claim. If we then look, Chairperson, at amendments, the quote of one element, I was talking around general damages. So you can't just look at the number. You have to look at the number, the spend, the combination of the total spend, the average cost, as well as the total value. That's where the one element came in. On the Amendment Act, really, it is a while back. I can't argue all aspects. I also know that the desired act is not ultimately the one which we operate on today on the basis of there being a constitutional court challenges. No act is perfect. I think the process is iterative. If we assume Parliament applied their mind to the Amendment Act, we shouldn't forget 2012, we had to put in place a Transitional Provisions Act because people were getting 25,000 rand as passengers. On the question, Chairperson, about how do I feel about 25,000, I'll be completely honest with you. My view of the RAF is not to reduce it to a legal business, a business of lawyers. That may be the legacy. It may be 6 billion rand worth of money. But that is not the RAF. I meant to say this earlier. If we reduce the discussion about the RAF to legal work, court work, and legal cost, then we're missing the plot. It is about people injured in car crashes. It is about pain and suffering. It is about how we support them. It can never only be about the contestation of the payout. When you're dealing with loss of income, loss of support, general damages, medical expenses for life in some instances, caregivers, undertakings, and funeral costs. To reduce it to the contestation related to litigation, I think is so wrong. If you want to see what I mean practically, 15,000 trials. The member of the committee presented some pages, right? 15,000 trials is a lot. But 188,000 total claims. 167,000 undertakings, 20,000 home visits, 110,000 supplier claim payments, 2,000 caregiver salaries on a monthly basis. You start realizing there's no way the court is only what the RAF is. It's wrong to do that. Now, when I then look at how we provide support to these people, we say to them, you are good enough to pay. Historically, before the Transitional Provisions Act, if you were a passenger, and in South Africa from 1942 to 2012, the majority of passengers are typically black people and poor people, because 15 million people travel in a taxi. And we said to these people, by law, you are good enough to pay, but at best we're giving you 25,000, no matter what the impact is on you. Then we apply the negligence test. Our actuaries have showed 40% of people are turned away every year, because they don't meet that test. And then within those who meet the negligence test, you then have how much did you lose? Oh, you were a poor person who therefore lost little, you'll get little. Oh, you were a rich person, you lost a lot, we'll pay you the maximum. That's wrong. So the 25,000 rand example, Chair, from the member of the committee, is there's no ways we can assume that's only for direct claims. It would be incorrect to assume only direct claims have a 25,000 rand passenger limit. The fixation on 25,000 is the previous law. And then if we look at claimants represented by attorneys, and you ask from a compassionate point of view, how do you say I motivate your medical needs to be a million rand, but I'll take 25% of that because that's my fee? Now you're depriving you're giving them three quarters of their medical needs. So all in all, if we're talking about compassion and helping people, this menu called the RAF Act is not the best way to do it, just at a compassionate level. If we then talk financially, it's clear it's also not the right way. So I believe we should apply our minds to putting in place something which achieves objectives and makes the lives of people better. Thanks, Chair.
You are talking like a doctor now, no longer a CEO. I think honorable members will, it's work in progress. Dr. Watson will always update us on what exactly is happening, particularly on these matters of your bank documents being docked and any other, the assets and properties of RAF being docked by whoever, so that we are always appraised with what the challenges that you are faced with on a regular basis. Thank you very much, Dr. Bengu. Thank you, Dr. Ngubane and the team. Advocate Masumbuka, you didn't say anything. Was there nothing that you wanted to say here? Or will you put it into the next? Because the next item comes from the Department of Transport. Can I hear from you?
Chair, good questions have been asked. Others have been clarified properly. And if there is any outstanding question which any member feels that is not properly answered, it can follow us in writing or follow the entity in writing, then it can be clarified or the entity can be summoned again to come and give some kind of a workshop. Chairperson, it is very important that there should be common understanding of what is happening at RAF so that even if you come up with a proposal, it's a good proposal that will take forward the institution. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Without much ado, we are expecting you to give us to brief us on the amendment of the road accident bill as has been brought to Parliament. Honourable Humsinga.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for allowing me to speak. I'm just cautious about what we're doing now. As I understand it, we asked the Road Accident Fund to come here to enlighten us on what happened now. But out of the questions and out of the deliberation, a lot of concerns were raised. And I'm not convinced that we actually achieved any real stage where we can say what happened would not happen again. So therefore, I'm not comfortable that we have achieved anything significant. We've rather come to a bigger understanding of the problem, and therefore I would ask for your consideration then to direct us to a further engagement and a further workshop around what has happened, and also guidance from the department then, how they would manage this, since a repetition of this would have big implications, and we are all very concerned about, you know, what where we are and what lies ahead for us, since this has been, you know, examples of looking in the barrel of a gun and things like that have been said in a symbolic way. But this is just an expression of how serious this is. So I would ask for your consideration then to let us have a workshop or a follow-up from the department on this topic. Unless I understand this totally wrong, and what you are suggesting is that the amendment which we are going to look at is the solution, which I in advance would argue it is not. So before we break up, if you would consider that, please, Chair, to give us direction and to accept my intervention then as a suggestion for a follow-up and a workshop around what has happened in the attachment of the central bank account of RAF, rather than to just move on to the next PowerPoint.
Thank you, Honourable Member. I thought as I was just trying to wrap up, I said RAF will be able to keep us appraised on the other issues that they believe we should be able to bring on board. Because I thought that one of the suggestions which was made by honourable members here was to say we need to go into an oversight exercise so that we're able to have an understanding of the magnitude of the challenges which RAF is experiencing. Probably out of the oversight and monitoring exercise, then we may consider the question of let's have a workshop so that we're able to really work on the matter. It's not a matter of that belongs to RAF. It belongs to us as a collective. And the other thing was, that is why I was saying, Advocate Masumbuka, if there is anything that he believes we should be able to look into from the department, it's us, it's the department and RAF, so that we're able to really holistically look at this, not in rose-colored glasses, but look at it raw as it is and be able to say, how do we go from forward? But I stand advised by honorable members as to your proposal that we should be able to look into and have a workshop around this matter so that we are able to map a way forward. I stand advised, honorable members.
Thank you, Chair. I really don't know how any oversight visit could intervene or give insight, since this is a very technical and a very sort of on-the-table situation. We sit with a huge deficit. We should sit with a fear of further legal action. And in total, it's an embarrassment. So I would suggest that we get some intervention, some suggestion from the department, probably supported, guided by Treasury, because this is around money. There's a serious need for claims to be paid out. I don't want to suggest any particular direction, but we are not talking of a just systemic situation or a management problem of some sort. We're talking of a specific threat that was demonstrated 2-3 weeks ago. And I would want to argue that that it's so specific that the department, in cooperation with Treasury, can surely manage to put something together and to present, you know, a emergency plan of some sort should a repetition of this happen again. That would, to a great extent, also support RAF and give comfort to a lot of victims, a lot of caretakers, a lot of people. I don't want to go into the sentimental route. Dr. Watson has done that. But then to just make sure that we have a plan, a contingency plan ready. And therefore, I think this committee should give a firm recommendation to the department to go speak to the minister, get minister into the working space, and to take action, talk to Treasury, and for the department then to come back with a firm action plan should something like this happen again. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Maswangani.
No, thanks, Chairperson. We are a committee of parliament responsible for oversight. We are not responsible for implementation. The separation of powers calls on the principle that specific functions, duties, and responsibilities are allocated to distinctive institutions. It is the responsibility of the executive to see to it that the issues that we have raised here are taken care of and implemented. If it means that we have to raise the matter with the minister who's accountable to us, I think that's what we should do so. It's not within our ambit to keep on following up on REF and chase them to court and to make sure that they do. We have got limit as to how far we can monitor them. We have to understand what becomes our responsibility as an oversight institution, so that we don't overstep our mandate, Chairperson. There will be time, I think, when we'll have to call the minister to deal with various entities that falls within a jurisdiction, including the saga that we saw since weekend of PRASA. The sooner we do that, the better, so that we deal with a whole range of issues right at the beginning of the year, RAF, PRASA, and others. And the minister will have to do what is
is allocated in terms of the constitution, the functions of making sure that these institutions are functional, and will report to Parliament as this committee as to what is it that we have done. Thank you.
Honorable Maswanganyi, Honorable Sibande, 1 minute, 2 minutes will be too much. Go ahead.
My second is enough for me. Yes. Chairperson, I think Honorable Maswanganyi Unkavile, because we are having the PFMA, which guides us exactly that what is our responsibility, and in terms of the separation of power. Kuti, who's doing the which, what, when, and how? I think second is enough. It's just to do oversight. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Mula, advocate.
Yeah, thanks, Chairperson. I stand to side with your view that as Parliament, it's also a prerogative to do oversight. It's there. So this problem in RAF, we can't take it simple like it's a minor offense. The RAF is in diversity, and it's the responsibility of RAF to pay compensate the victim, because people, they're paying petrol and everything. At the end, they will turn against the government that we are paying levies, but the government is not doing anything. So I think we must have a chance to do an oversight on this issue. Because this thing of sitting here and be told everything, sometimes it can mislead us. Look what's happening to Prasa now. You see. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, honorable members. I think we will look into issues of oversight. We'll also engage the minister on this matter. But I think as you are talking, honorable members, it will be very important that out of this that we got from the Road Accident Fund leadership, it will be very important that we start to engage the Portfolio Committee on Treasury to say these are the issues that we have identified. How do we collaborate and cooperate to make sure that these things, as the minister has put the budget, what are the things that we can be able to help both ministers as we go going forward? But it is important that we should be able to look into critical issues that are there as part of our oversight, and also to acquaint ourselves with what exactly is this monster that Road Accident Fund is dealing with. We always see REF on the road, but we have never gone there where there will be action, and we are able to say what exactly is it that we are talking about. We always say it's waste of money and all these things, court issues which have so eloquently been spoken about, and every other thing. When we do oversight, probably we should be able to have an understanding as to what are the critical things. Probably maybe even to engage the law firms which actually are working in this space to say what are the things that as legislators we can be able to work towards maximizing the benefits of our people as work is being done according to the Road Accident Fund. Advocate, we are just left with 35 minutes to can be able to work on the proposed bill, Road Accident Fund amendment bill, and I'm going to really request that we be as specific as possible. Probably there will still be some repetition and repetition. I've noticed you, Advocate.
you're seated next to the advocate, Honorable De Freitas. So you are also advocate. Shafana Ingwasolo is the same. Professor De Freitas. Doctor, advocate, Professor De Freitas. Whatever suits you.
Chair, I'm a little concerned about the limited time we have. This is a very important item, and we're not going to give it justice. Even if the presenter does present in 25 minutes, there's no ways we would be able to interrogate it. And I wonder, it wouldn't be an idea that we rather, you know, allocate real proper time from the beginning, we properly present it. I know it means that we have to get officials back again, but this is very important, and I just don't think we'll give it justice today. Thank you.
Honourable members, there's a suggestion that because we have we're running short of time, and that we postpone the presentation, and then the team will be called again to come and make a presentation. That's a suggestion that is coming from honourable members. I don't know if there's a counter. A proposal towards this. It's counter-revolutionary, politically speaking. Honorable Mlaudzi.
Yes, I'm attempted to second because we must be in the house at 2 o'clock. So we need time in this thing because we can see this amendment. It's very much misleading.
Yes. There's a seconder to the proposal. Is there?
But the motivation, we don't agree. We don't agree with the misleading statement.
One person talking, Honorable Masongai.
Yeah, Honorable Mlaudzi did the right thing in seconding. But the motivation is misleading. That this amendment is misleading.
Honorable
Mlaudzi. So we should not agree on the basis of what he said. We
Can
should agree
withdraw?
With the first part.
Yeah. Honorable Mlaudzi, withdraw. Drawer.
Okay.
No.
I draw.
Honorable members, thank you very much. Advocate, the proposal from the members is that we will not deal with the amendments today because we are short of time. We will be able to engage you where it will just be from 9:30 until 1 o'clock yourself so that members can be able to really deal with the matters intensely. We would now go to the last but one agenda item, which are the minutes to be considered. You want to be recused?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Doctor, what's it? Will I see you again?
Why did you come to Parliament wearing jeans? Is Ralph not paying you?
My suit.
So,
I'm going to go to the next one.
Atabelang go Jehova. Honorable members, can we quickly look into the minutes? The 21st of February. This is the only set of minutes. Okay. All right. Honorable members, can we look into the first page of the minutes? Any correction? Any? Can we move to the second page? Okay. The third page of the minutes. Can we go into the fourth page? Honorable Humsinga, why are you not reading the minutes? You know them by head or by heart.
See, since you make use of the microphone, I have got the minutes in front of me. I'm working with you page by page.
Page 5. Can we adopt the minutes? Honorable De Freitas has moved for the adoption of the minutes. Is there a seconder? Honorable Sibande has seconded the minutes. I think we have dealt with today's business. On that note, advocate and this African man.
Yes.
Hey, when are we going to invite Prasa? Because things are boiling.
How?
They're coming next week. Okay.
Don't you have your program in front of you? You can't wait for Prasa. If we had 3 days, where the committee will be sitting,
yeah, because I advised the minister not to take the CFO.
No, we can't.
Now I want yes.
No. Prasa is coming next week. Yeah. The two of you just sit down. I haven't declared the meeting closed.
Even the president can't wait for Prasa. All the Sunday Times, they will say, "Ah, this AAC deployment." He will come wearing the blue overall next week. Yeah, it will be the blue and the red overall.
Singa, you had something to say?
Yes, thank you, Chair. I would like to just say 3 things, if you'll allow me. Firstly, it's great to have you back.
Yes, welcome.
We know you've been through a tough time, and we're really happy to have you back. And also your husband at the back there too, supporting you all along. And then I do understand that it's the birthday today of our committee secretary, Valerie. Yeah. And I forgot the third point.
Thank you very much, Honorable Humsinga. I feel so humbled and honored. I'm now up and about, so my energy levels are back, so you will have to contain with my adrenaline. Happy birthday, Valerie. I think we really owe you one as this committee. But last week, Honorable Ramatlakana's birthday also. I don't know if it was. Oh, yes. Anniversary. It was a birthday, yes. Yes, it was a birthday. I don't know if the committee have said that. If they have said, let me also say it here, that happy birthday, Comrade Leonard. And thank you very much for holding forward in my absence. And I missed you guys. Make no mistake, I missed you. But I've realized one thing.
Okay. Yeah.